Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmuck, Lance Mehta with you. The phone number is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat. If you're watching or listening on Twitter, thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Giants mobile app, Giants.com. And Lance, I feel like for the past 3 or 4 months, we have been sitting here and saying, well, we really don't know what's going to happen until they put the pads on. Well, the day is finally here. Training camp might have started last Friday or Thursday, whatever day you want to say, depending on when you count it. But you really don't get to start evaluating until the pads come on. Now, it's not full pads today, but they're putting the shoulder pads on. They're getting about halfway there.
Well, the energy is going to go up. The physicality is going to go up. And like you said, I mean, it's not as if we haven't had an opportunity to observe the personnel over the course of the offseason program. But even the players will tell you, I mean, how many times has Snacks talked to the media, John? And he's like, listen, I am not a guy that's going to stand around and just look at my teammates. I want to put the pads on and get down and dirty in the trenches. So everybody's chomping at the bit right now, especially the offensive linemen, especially the defensive linemen, and that's what I've been waiting to see, you know, how far along this offensive line has come and what we're going to see from some of the young guys competing for that other defensive tackle job.
Yeah, we do not yet get one-on-ones from O-line, D-line today. I've done a little bit of scouting around. I've asked some questions. My understanding is that they'll work into that. I don't think that's happening today. You'll get a little bit O-line, D-line, 7-on-7s. So you'll get a little bit of it, but not true one-on-ones, which is always a lot of fun. I'm guessing you'll get that on one of the next 2 days when they have full pads on either Wednesday or Thursday, so we'll check that out. But you're right. And the questions we've gone all off-season long from everybody, I mean, there's been constant, and understandably so, has been about the offensive line. And we've been able to say things like, well, their attitude is right. They've worked hard in the off-season. Their conditioning is better. All that stuff's great. Sometimes that stuff translates. Sometimes that stuff doesn't. Well, this is when we start figuring out whether or not that stuff translates. And I'll throw this out, too. Olivier Vernon wasn't here for the OTAs. He was here for a couple of days of minicamp, so we didn't even get to see Eric Flowers go up against Olivier Vernon. He was going up against backup caliber players, not a star like Vernon. So you put all that together, we're going to find out a little bit about this team and this offensive line specifically over the next few days, which will give us a good preparation for the first preseason game where a even better evaluation can take place.
Absolutely. I think we'll also maybe get a better idea in terms of where the true competition is, John, on the offensive line, in terms of the rotations. You know, you always like to see who's on the first team, who's on the second team. Maybe they're rotating guys in at guard and tackle. DJ Fluker, I think, is one of the offensive linemen to keep close tabs on. You talked about what translates from the practice field to games. My big question after watching DJ Fluker at his press conferences, will the enthusiasm translate over to the football field? Let me ask you this. I never thought somebody had more enthusiasm than Paul DiTino connected to the New York Giants.
He doesn't.
I may have to revisit that after. I don't know about that, John. I don't know about that.
He might have gotten into the zip code.
Oh, he entered the zip code, okay? He didn't just tap around it. He entered the zip code. DiTino has never even shown that much emotion and enthusiasm.
Thing about Fluker that's interesting, back in the spring, I think it was Jerry Reese that said, when he was asked directly, is Fluker going to be competing at right tackle or is he going to be competing at guard? And somebody gave the flat-out answer, we see him as a guard.
Yeah.
I don't remember if it was Jerry Reese or Ben McAdoo or...
It was one of the two.
It was one of those two guys. I forget who it was. But when Ben McAdoo was asked a question earlier in the camp about that, what position do you see Fluker at? He says, I see him as a right side of the line player, which tells me he could be in the mix in terms of competition at right tackle as well. DJ Fluker was asked about how much he's been at right tackle over the course of the offseason program, and he said a little bit at the beginning of the OTAs, but not a whole lot since then. So, like you said, I think it'll be interesting to see whether or not he gets run at right tackle with the first or second team, or is he going to be primarily a guard competing with John Jerry?
Yeah, that was the most notable quote that Ben McAdoo said during one of his early training camp press conferences, the fact that we initially were focusing on, okay, maybe Fluker and John Jerry are going to be battling out at the right guard spot, John, as you alluded to. Now, by him saying, like you said, he's a right side offensive lineman, that opens the door for, well, maybe he's going to challenge Bobby Hart a little bit at right tackle.
And that's what I thought when he came in here. I thought he would provide competition for Hart, but then all the signs in the spring were, no, he's going to be a guard. But I think the door, while maybe not wide open, There's a little sunlight coming through. He got a little bit of a crack.
And it should be open.
Absolutely.
He should get reps at right tackle.
I mean, he started 2 years at tackle and 2 years at guard.
And he was a tackle in college, so there's no reason why you shouldn't at least toy with it. That doesn't mean that Bobby Hart should be overly concerned, but competition pushes everybody. And I think at this point, with the versatility they have on the offensive line, the more they mix and match during the preseason when they should do that, then that will give them a better sample size as to which five they actually want to throw out there for week one against the Dallas Cowboys.
Absolutely. And again, we'll get to see them go go 5-on-5 today. We're not going to have 1-on-1s, but we'll get a good taste for Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart and the rest of the offensive line against the defensive line that is just as excited about getting physical. Jonathan Casillas had a great quote the other day at his press conference saying he's looking forward to see how Dalvin Tomlinson plays at defensive tackle and Snacks Harrison. You mentioned the competition. This is when you're going to start seeing, is it going to be Robert Thomas? Is it going to be Dalvin Tomlinson right away, which is tough for a rookie? Is it going to be Jay Bromley that finally meets some of that potential the Giants saw in him when they drafted him in the fourth round a few years ago? So those are our third round a few years ago.
Yep.
So what are those things that they're going to show? And I think it'll be a real interesting thing to see.
And Ben McAdoo actually talked about Robert Thomas during his press conference. He was asked about one of those guys that you just mentioned that's going to be in competition for that other defensive tackle spot. And high praise for Robert Thomas, somebody that dealt with an illness last season. But when he got an opportunity late throughout the season, he did show some flashes. And one of the things that Ben McAdoo had mentioned is that, you know, Robert Thomas is not just a run stuffer. He's also a guy that has shown that he has a knack to get to the quarterback. And I think any team, when they look at the defensive tackle spot, they want to see whether or not it's not just a matter of filling the holes and stopping the run, but can you get additional pass rush?
Right.
Even Snacks was talking about this, John. He mentioned
that's
one
his
of
one
his
big
goals.
Goal this year.
Correct.
Yeah.
He wants to improve in terms of his sack numbers. And when he said that, I said what a lot of people tend to forget is, remember, Snacks is coming off a season in which he set a career high. It wasn't a huge number. It was 2.5 sacks, but that was more than he ever had in his four seasons with the Jets. So you get that if he's looking to improve on that, and then perhaps whoever you put next to him, if that player can provide some pass rush too, that to me is an added bonus. If you can get some penetration from your defensive tackles, I'm not just talking about stopping the run. I'm also talking about getting to the quarterback. Just think about how well that will complement JPP and Vernon.
Absolutely. One other piece of news we should catch up on before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513. The Giants made a roster move today. They had an open roster spot because of the retirement of undrafted free agent out of Clemson, Jadar Johnson. They bring in Mike Nugent, which a New Yorker should be familiar with. He started his career with the New York Jets. Since then, he's been with the Cincinnati Bengals, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we kind of spoke about all spring regarding a veteran to come in and compete with Aldrick Rosas, and the Giants did that today. They bring in a guy in Nugent who's been in the league since 2005. This will be his 12th season. So it'll be a good competition for Rosas to maybe put a little bit of pressure on him. And I think what's tough to simulate, Lance, in these practices is the pressure that a field goal kicker has to face in a game situation. And I think having a veteran here to provide competition does crank the gears a little bit in terms of the pressure, and maybe it'll help in Rosas' development. I think best case scenario, the Giants want Rosas to win the job, but having a veteran here, again, to provide competition, to be a safety net, can't be a bad thing.
Well, even Ben McAdoo said, listen, we're really not going to learn about anybody at this point, especially in the kicking game, until we get into the preseason.
Right.
So he understands that, too. You try to simulate those pressure situations. You try to have things on the line at the end of practice, whether or not the team's got to do push-ups or win sprints. Do they have to practice for an extra 10 or 20 minutes if he misses the field goal so that he maybe feels what that type of environment is going to be like? But competition, we were talking about at other positions, it's no different with respect to the kicking game. They had some options here last year with Josh Brown, so this is nothing new necessarily in terms of the track record for the team. Nugent's a polished kicker. He's been with a few teams, as you mentioned. He's been in some pressure situations, and ultimately, the competition is going to separate itself from the rest of the pack once we see the preseason games. No matter what these kicks come through during the course of training camp, John, at the end of the day, you still need to see what happens in gameplay.
Absolutely, and I think that'll be the trick for Rosas. And one issue in Nugent, and fair disclosure, we should bring this up, he has had some accuracy issues over the last few years. He was just 26 of 33 back in 2014, 23 of 28 in 2015. That was over 80%. That's solid. And last year, he was 23 of 29 on field goals. The problem was last year, he was just 23 of 29 on extra points. So that's something that you have to keep an eye on and look out for, because as we always talk about, and Jeff Fiegels, I think, made a great point when he interviewed Rosas for our show on MSG on Monday, that kicking is largely a mental thing. And once something like that gets in your head, can the kicker get it out? It's like a golfer who's got the yips when he's putting.
Yeah.
You know, can you overcome that? And that's something we'll have to watch with Nugent over the course of training camp and, once again, we get into the preseason games.
And also related to that, if you're a young kicker like Rosas, who has not been in the NFL,
right,
if you do have a kick that didn't go the way you anticipated, can you easily regroup and recover from that? The one thing I will say is, John, while Nugent has had some struggles that you just listed, he has experience, though, in terms of bouncing back. That's the biggest difference, and that's what you want to see. Not that you want to see Rosas struggle, but you want to see if there is an opportunity where he's dealing with adversity, how does he then come back and respond? That you can't simulate during practice. You need game situations to do that. The one thing, though, I did want to add, John, that
please,
Rosas mentioned when he spoke to the media, even though he did have some interesting things to say about Jeff Fiegels in that media session, I should add, at the end, talking about how Fiegels has helped him and provided advice. But he said that when he was asked about the competition and not having another kicker here and how you simulate competition or how does that go through your mind, he mentioned, you know what, I'm competing against every other kicker in the National Football League.
And that point just got proven today.
There you go. Because he knows that he's trying to prove himself. If he doesn't make this roster, he
right,
wants to prove himself mm-hmm, to the rest of the teams. And if there's somebody else that doesn't make a roster, perhaps the Giants would take a look at that kicker too. So I think at least he understands the business of the NFL.
Absolutely. All right, folks, 201-939-4513. It'll be me, you, Lance, your phone calls the rest of the way. Let's get going. Line four, Nick is in Texas. He's going to lead us off on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
How are you?
Nick?
What's up?
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Nick. What's up?
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm actually first-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
I'm actually kind of excited to be on the line. So,
well, we are excited to have you on the line, Nick. What do you got for us?
I have a quick question. How's Biznawati doing? How's he learning the system?
You know, Biznawati seems like a pretty sharp guy. Again, I'm not gonna sit here and judge his play before they get pads on. Give me a call on Thursday or Friday, and I'll give you a better feel for exactly how the offensive linemen are playing with the pads on and the defense going full speed and all that good stuff. And then they have a really big physical practice on August 5th, too, by the way. That was a practice that Ben McAdoo pointed out at the beginning of camp. That's going to be like, I think that's going to be full 9-on-7, like whole 9 yards physicality stuff. But from my understanding is that he's pretty sharp mentally. He did not – he played in, I think, 4 different offenses at Pittsburgh. They moved around a lot in terms of the way they played, so he's had to learn a bunch of systems. So I don't think the mental part of the game for Biznawati, Nick, is going to be a problem. Whether or not he can handle the athleticism of NFL pass rushers, I think that's a fair question.
And he had been playing some right tackle going back to the offseason program. That's where they were lining him up. It'll be interesting because, once again, we were talking about how Fluker is referred to now as a right-side offensive lineman. I don't know. Do they move Biznawati a little bit over to the left? Do they try to toy with his position that he played?
Chad Wheeler Pittsburgh? Has been the second left tackle, by the way.
So, you know, that's going to be something interesting to monitor when we look at what the depth chart is for offensive linemen. But I think, Nick, as John said, I would echo his sentiment. It's very difficult to get a good read on any offensive linemen, veterans or rookies, when they really have yet to put the pads on at this point.
Cool. How about Rhett Ellison's injury?
Luckily, Rhett Ellison looks like he's healthy. Again, we really didn't get a chance to see him in the spring because of that calf, but he's been out there and pretty much doing everything, Nick. So it's pretty encouraging that he's been out there practicing so far this summer.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. Hey, you guys have a great day, and thank you for getting my call.
Nick, thanks for calling in. Welcome to the show, and feel free to give us a call back whenever you feel like it. 201-939-4513. Ken in New Jersey. He's joining us next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hi, Ken.
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing today?
Doing well, Ken. Thank you.
I was actually at a training camp on Saturday.
Nice.
I spoke to Paul, but I'm
sorry
not sure
about
if he'll
that.
Recognize
yeah.
me.
Are you? Did you take Sunday to regroup and recover? You okay now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm all right. Well, actually, it was right after Beckham scored like a 40-yard touchdown, and the whole stands were going crazy, and I was standing right on the catwalk there, and P-Dot walked in front of me, so I got to say hi to him. I wanted to actually talk about the upcoming Dallas game. I wanted to give a bold prediction.
Sure.
I think the Giants will win the time of possession week 1 against Dallas, And that's all I got, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, wow. You know what that is?
Right. I appreciate the phone call.
See, now you got to make me do this from the wall.
I'm going to add another one to the list.
And that's a good one, though. I think that's actually a very realistic.
That's a very detailed bold prediction.
It is. I like that.
It's a facet within the game. That's what I like about that.
And I think if that happens, I think the Giants probably do win the game.
Well, and I think if that happens, that also means that the Giants are running the ball effectively, too, probably.
And that means they're probably up in the game as well.
So there's a lot of things to read into that. And I will say that if you do beat the Cowboys, one of the most effective ways in beating the Cowboys is time of possession, because that means you keep their defense on the field and you keep their offense off the field.
Though that will be a tough go of it. The one thing the Cowboys defense did do extremely well last year was stop the run. They were number one in the league in terms of rush yards per game. Now, I do think that number was skewed a bit because they led in so many games. Other teams tended to pass more than they ran. I think realistically, you look at, you know, yards per play and yards per carry, that sort of stat when it comes to rushing plays are probably closer to like 8 to 12,
But the yards per play was still respectable, John.
Like I said, they were somewhere between 8th and 12th in the league,
Solid. Yeah. And I agree with you. That's a better indication. Plus, you also need to take into consideration if their run defense is strong and their secondary struggling, teams are going to purposely look to air it out too. So all of that has to be put into perspective.
But when you got Sean Leeson there at linebacker running around and, you know, reading running plays, he was a terror against the Giants in that second game last year.
What, he had like 17 tackles or whatever? I mean, it was crazy.
It's like he knew where the plays were going before the plays got ran. He was just all over the place. I was reading, I'm trying to remember. I believe it was Andy Benoit, who does a lot of the X's and O's stuff for Monday Morning Quarterback, and he says he was talking to a Cowboys front office personnel or a scout, something like that. And he said, well, you know, when I'm watching a play, how do I figure out if, you know, the guys are doing the right thing? Because he obviously doesn't know play calls. The same problem that I always talk about when I run into it and look at this game film. If I don't know where the guy is supposed to go, how am I going to know whose fault it is, right? Simple problem. He goes, here's what you do. And this is what the front office guy told Andy Benoit. He goes, watch Sean Lee. Whatever he does is right. If somebody's doing something that Sean Lee's not, they're wrong. So he goes, oh, what? He's right, what, like 9 out of 10 times? And the front office person goes, no. Try 98 out of 100.
Wow.
So that's the type of respect that people around the league have for Sean Lee.
Yeah.
If he stays healthy, and that's always been the problem with him.
It's interesting because I always bring up Luke Kuechly when we talk about the best linebackers. I'm curious if the Panthers coaches would have the same viewpoint of Kuechly as they do with Sean. I'm sure, but I'm just curious in terms of the percentage as well.
And you can throw Thomas Davis into the mix there, too.
He's another solid
both of those guys, they've been around for a while. They're both veterans. I'm sure both of them have that playbook inside and out at this point.
Very smart, cerebral players.
And, you know, if Sean Lee hadn't had so many injury issues, he'd probably be considered close on the same level as Kuechly, to be honest with you. He's just dealt with so many leg issues, and now Kuechly's dealing with the concussions, too. So, you know, obviously, you know, both are issues. You got to deal with them. But
injury bug.
Exactly. 201-939-4513. By the way, folks, you do have a couple open lines if you want to get in and sneak on in and give us a call and talk about camp. Again, padded practice begins today. A lot going on, and we'll be happy to have you and talk Giants football or anything else you want to discuss right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Christian in New York. Christian's up next. Hi, Christian.
Hey, guys. It is just shoulder pads today, right?
Yeah, just uppers. Not full. Full pads will be Wednesday and Thursday.
And something I was wondering is if you guys think that with the shoulder pads, that it's still too early to try to read into what you're seeing too much, and if it might be a little bit, just a little bit deceiving still.
No. I think when they put the uppers on, frankly, a lot of the skill position guys don't like wearing, like, thigh pads and knee pads anyway, so shoulder pads is really all they wear. I know that's different for the offensive line and the defense line, but trust me, once these guys get the shoulder pads on, they get that's their mental signal where they can let go and go all out a little bit. So I will be, over the next 4 or 5 days, through the weekend practices, I will have my eyes peeled on the O-line, D-line matches more than anything else, and what I start seeing now will dictate some of my analysis and conclusions that I draw going forward, because it was around this time of year last year, Christian, quite frankly, that you saw the same type of issues in practice from, you know, Flowers and Hart and some of the other offensive linemen that you saw come up in the game situations later. So I do think these next few days in pads is very, very important.
Yeah, and I should have been more specific. I was just talking about the offensive line, because I'm just so excited to start watching Flowers and Hart.
Well, I think everybody's in the same boat right now. You can't really tell what's going on in the trenches until they put the pads on so they can be more physical with one another. Guys are not trying to hurt one another at this point when they don't have the pads on and they're wearing helmets, jerseys, and shorts. So you can understand the mindset is going to change now that they have the pads on. So I think it's going to be a good tell in terms of how far along this offensive line has come.
And frankly, you can even look at the running back and the linebackers. You really can't see anything with the running backs and the linebackers either. I don't think you'll see enough with them, though, honestly, until you get into more of the 9-on-7 stuff, and that won't be until later in the week when they start getting really physical. But quite frankly, Christian, and I'll say this too, if you read my practice analysis stories and things like that, you'll never see me mention the running backs. Here's why. How am I supposed to judge a running back when nobody's trying to tackle him? The main job of running back is to avoid tacklers. If no one's trying to tackle them, how am I supposed to judge how they're doing? So I would take any running back stuff with a grain of salt until a preseason game. That's when you can start talking about running backs.
And you could also tell about pass protection, too, in the preseason games, which is also extremely important for the running backs. Hard to tell when you're in the midst of practice.
Right. And, you know, something I just don't understand with Paul, and I'll mention it to him, too, if – somehow, like, if you're in the 220s, you're not a power back. I mean, people in the 220s are, you know, are decently big at running back. And, you know, Darkwa is right in that category. And that touchdown against Dallas a couple of years ago, he was plowing his way to the end zone. I mean, he runs powerful. And, you know, I just don't see how you have to be in the 230s to be a power back, because those guys are really just the top end of it.
Yeah, I think Paul's a bit of a traditionalist when it comes to that. You know, he's somebody that looks at it kind of like Parcells did, who had, you know, I want guys at certain positions to be a certain height and weight. I'm more on your side of things, where to me, you can run like a power back with that type of style, even if you're not that big. Now you're going to be limited maybe in your effectiveness. You're going to be much more powerful as a running back, you know, running at, 235 pounds than 215 pounds. That's just the nature of the beast. You put your shoulder down, you get a more force to push your way forward. But, yeah, I agree. I think you can have a quote-unquote power back that doesn't necessarily weigh 230.
I mean, Darkwa's got – I'm just looking at the measurements. Darkwa, who you threw out as a comparison, he's got 2 inches and 7 pounds on Paul Perkins. But to me, I think it goes back to the style of running.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Maurice Jones-Drew. And I don't know what his weight is off the top of my head when he was at the prime of his career. But Maurice Jones-Drew was not a big guy in terms of stature. He was a small guy. He was under 6 feet tall. Maurice Jones-Drew, though, is a guy that if you gave him the ball and you ran him up the gut, you'd feel good that he could plow over guys because of the style and the aggressiveness of his running. So that, to me, is more indicative of how effective you are as a running back as opposed to, you know, you're 6'2 and, you know, over 250 pounds or whatever it may be, because you may not be as aggressive or you may not be taking advantage of your body frame. So what good is that?
Right, and Jones-Drew was completely filled out. I mean, his weight is way up there for his height.
Well, that is
and, But, you know, it's just like with Wayne Gallman, him too. I mean, if you watch the way – I know guys are smaller in college, but he was absolutely running them over. And, you know, he's only going to get a little bit heavier as time goes on. But
yeah, but
you
Christian,
know,
you know what, honestly? Watching Gallman, I think he's more of a I don't think Gallman is a traditional power back, though. He runs high. He ran out of the shotgun a lot. He has a good jump cut type of thing. I would not, in my opinion, consider Wayne Gallman a traditional power back, one cut type of guy either. That's just in my opinion. I think he's more similar to Paul Perkins than he is to Orleans Darkwa.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel he could be complete at the very least.
Sure.
But, I mean, because, yeah, he's better at those other things, but I just feel like he could serve you well on some third and shorts, you know, just
but well,
Darkwa mainly.
Just,
if you're in the 220s, I mean, you're powerful enough.
Yeah, absolutely, Christian. I agree with you, and thanks a lot for the call, man. I appreciate it. 201-939-4513. I mean, you don't have to be, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, at, you know, whatever he is. I'm assuming he's, what, 228, Zeke?
Yeah, he must be. I mean, he's certainly body build. Yes, correct. He looks it than Paul Perkins. But once again, it goes back to the style.
225, actually, believe it or not.
All right, so
actually a little bit lighter than I thought. But you don't have to be that size to be a power back.
No, because once again, I mean, you can make up for what you're losing in size in terms of your style of running. That's what it goes back to. Exactly. To be extremely aggressive, and it's not going to really make a difference how small or how big you are.
We haven't heard from Jerry down in Florida in a while. What's up, Jerry? How are you?
Hey, John. Hey, how are you doing, and has your child been born yet?
No, that's why I'm here. she is due on Thursday the 3rd. I am on high alert. The phone is ready and on and ready to go. There are no signs that it's imminent, so I'm thinking she might be a little bit tardy. Tom Coffa will be very disappointed. She'll be fine coming out. But we are waiting and anxious and excited.
Well, I want to give you some advice.
Okay.
I'd like you to consider resting up and getting to enjoy a good night's rest, because once your child is born, you will never have a carefree good night's sleep again.
I will keep that in mind, and with camp going on, yes. Good luck.
I got to tell you, I was a little bit skeptical. I once had somebody say that to me as I was anticipating my first child, and I said, oh, this is just an old wives' tale. But it turned out to be true. The last good night's sleep I had was the night before my child was born, and it's been 30 years, and I haven't had a good night's sleep since. But anyway, I wish you well and congratulations. Uh-oh. And my question really is there any person, anybody that you can see on the Giants who could possibly fill the role that John Riggins did for the Jets and the Redskins?
Boy, that's... Wow. I don't think so, because John Riggins also served as a blocker on those teams and a runner. I don't see someone on the Giants that can do both those things at the level that John Riggins did. So honestly, I'd probably have to say no, in my opinion. Yeah, I think.
How about, is there anybody that can fill his role on the last 3 to 4 minutes of the game?
That's a good
where
question.
They just gave him the ball, everybody knew he was getting the ball, and you just couldn't stop him.
Well, I think Perkins showed flashes of that late last season where they had drives and he was continually running it. I mean, whether or not he's going to run over guys, that remains to be seen. I think he has the potential, though, on a final drive, eat up clock, take advantage of the holes. We saw that a little bit late in the season. He would be the first guy that would come to mind.
Yeah, Jerry, honestly, I'm with Lance here. Obviously, the style would be very different, as Lance pointed out. But I think in that situation, when you're in a four-minute offense, I don't care about the style. I care about the guy that gets the yards and gets the job done. So you want the best possible running back on the field in those situations. I mean, Le'Veon Bell is fast and, you know, quick and elusive. He's not a power back, but do you want him on the field for your four-minute offense? Abso-frickin-lutely you do. He's awesome. He's a great running back. So, yes, I think Perkins can do it. Do I know if he can do it to the level of John Riggins? I think asking him to be a Hall of Fame caliber running back is probably a little bit premature, and I'm the captain of the fan club here. Yeah. But you hope, and we'll see. I'm not sure if this Giants offense, though, honestly, Jerry, is built and equipped to be the type of offense that says, we're going to run the ball and dare you to stop us. This is a team, I think, where it's set up where teams are supposed to worry about the passing game, and you take advantage of having those DBs on the field, having the safeties back and things like that, and you run the ball. So that's how I view this offense. We'll see if I'm right or I'm wrong, but that's how I see it.
Remember, going back to last season, if you were to ask me one game where that philosophy was evident that you just labeled and that Jerry was alluding to, was back in week one against the Dallas Cowboys when they ran it with Brett Jones as the fullback and Rashad Jennings in the backfield. And you knew they were running it, and they still picked up the down. And they still weren't even able to run out the clock under those circumstances.
And there was another game where they did it late in the year. I believe it was the Bengals.
Bengals, correct. Yes, I stand corrected. Since he would be another good example.
Yep.
You're right. Were they able to run out the clock? Jennings, it parted like the Red Sea. He ran through on that play and helped. They milked
they
the clock on that one.
Two first downs
correct.
On that final drive.
But that's two games we're talking about out
yep.
of 16 last year. So if you do want to get to that stage of continuity and consistency, I still think it falls back on let's see the progress of the O-line.
Well, and think about how many times the defense had to end the game on the field getting a stop. You hope the offense can finish the game with the ball in their hands a little bit more this year, Jerry. Thanks a lot for the call.
Right.
Appreciate it. 201-939-4513.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the hat.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
Charlie in Portland, Maine. What's going on, Chuckles?
Hey, John. Hey, Lance. It's getting harder to avoid you. You're all over the dial.
It's getting harder, man.
Well, I'm trying to avoid you at all costs.
Charlie, it's
that.
Awful, isn't it? So. I mean, who wants to turn around and have to listen to this guy all the time?
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Who wants to turn around and listen to Charlie? How about that, too?
I'm telling you, I think there are so many Sirius stations. I think you can find a Sirius station that can, like, you know, fit Charlie. Maybe like,
oh, well, of course.
Maybe like Lumberjack Radio, something
listen,
like that.
If he paid enough money, they'd put an extra satellite up in the air just to add a new channel and add one to the listing so Charlie can break down the offensive line of every single team.
Do you guys have any?
Speaking of the offensive line, though, just go ahead.
I don't even know. Charlie,
I was going to ask this, Charlie. I wasn't sure if Sirius has an herbalism channel. Is there a way you can get him in there to have a show just on Artica? No? Could that work out? No?
Oh, boy. Fascinating radio. I'm chomping at the bit to listen to that program.
Herbalism radio. Only on Sirius XM.
Yeah. What creams to put on your body when you're in pain? Yeah. Give us a call at 1-800 whatever.
August 9th, that is the day your child will be born. So just chill out until then.
Well, that's 6 days off the schedule. So
Well, you know what? Let me tell you. Now that you said it's August 9th, at least I know what day it's not going to be.
No, it's going to be the 9th, I'm telling you.
Why is that?
But yeah, I'd love to hear the why, Charlie.
Tell me why.
Because it's my wedding anniversary.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God, please don't let her be born on the 9th. Oh,
you'll never
please.
Hear the end of it. John Schmoke's first child and Charlie are connected for life for the remaining of eternity.
You know it's going to happen.
Oh, my God.
Now. You know it. Hey, I got a question for you.
When do you never have a question? But anyway, yes.
Who is our backup left tackle if Eric Flowers goes down or just has to leave a game or two? Can you tell me who is going to be our left tackle?
I can't tell you for sure. I could tell you what I believe it is going to be, and I believe it would be Justin Pugh. And I think that's something they don't want to do, but I believe that is something they will be forced to do unless Chad Wheeler or Adam Biznavati or somebody else really steps up and plays great in the preseason. I think Pugh would be the guy that would have to move out the left tackle.
The only other option that I'll throw out, and this is just pure speculation on my part too, maybe Fluker toying with him at left tackle if he's that swing guy, because of the experience he has.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm not saying that's the first choice, but if you want to go the veteran route, Pugh would be number one, Fluker would be number two, and then obviously turning to Wheeler or Biznavati, depending on who makes the team.
Right.
So then moving into left guard, we assume it would either be Cherry or Fluker, whoever doesn't win that competition.
Or you could also put Brett Jones at left guard too. Let's not forget about that.
Yeah, I think
about him.
Yeah, I think any of those three would work, Charlie.
Yeah. So that sounds like a really good plan B, doesn't it?
See, you know what I love about Charlie?
I said sarcasm.
Yeah, well, of course. Oh, well, absolutely. Charlie and sarcasm. The fact that he asked the question when he already knows the answer, just so that he could get the responses he got out of us and then throw out sarcasm. Do you understand? See, he has this game plan in place before he even calls up. I don't even know why we're even answering the question when Charlie already has plan B, C, D, E, and F.
Now, I think Charlie likes to ask us these questions. Then if we don't give the answer he thinks is correct, then he gets very upset and he gets mad.
Well, apparently we gave the answer he wanted to hear
correct.
So that he could just go with the sarcasm.
That is correct.
Yes,
I agree.
Exactly. So.
Hey, you
I'm
guys
glad
think
we're
I
here
planned
for
this all out? Hey, you give me a lot of credit, man.
Yeah. You know,
you have nothing else to do, Charlie. You're sitting there with your yellow legal pad like the Tino of practice planning your next phone call.
You're either developing the next great cream from leaves or you're studying the offensive line. It's one of two. So I don't know how you separate all of these activities in your day, but I'm confident that you have the time to do that.
Well, keep us posted on the O-line anyway.
Hey, Charlie, by the way, I have to ask you this. Have you been keeping track of Falcons practice at all?
Yeah, I have, actually.
So give me an update. Give me an update. How has your boy Pepe Le Pew been doing?
He has been doing well. You know, two of their wide receivers went down. And so that's going to help him make the team. And they brought in some, a couple of more bodies in there. So they're dwindling. They're dwindling, so I think he has a really good
Charlie's
chance.
Rooting for injuries to get him on the team.
he is desperately pushing.
Thank you, Charlie.
Every former
All right,
Giant.
Have a good,
Take
good
it
day.
Easy,
I'll
man.
Talk
you,
to you
too,
soon.
Buddy.
All right, Charlie. Because
now, folks, if you don't know out there, he is a standing bet with Jeff Eagles that if his name actually escapes me right now,
yeah,
the former Giants wide receiver. Huh? Thank you, Anthony Dabwe, who was the Giants' wide receiver last year in the preseason in the practice squad. Actually, I don't think he was on the practice squad during the year.
No.
If he makes the 50-feet-3 for the Falcons, Jeff brings him down to a game and watches a game with him. And if
Which
he doesn't,
gonna regret,
then Charlie's
anyway.
Going to send out a bunch of Maine lobsters for him.
Yes. Well, hopefully he'll tie them up.
I hope Charlie has the traps in the water because he's not going to win that bet.
Yes. I feel good about Jeff's chances under those circumstances. The other thing that's important for the audience to know, I'm sure they already know, Charlie is fascinated with former Giants and what they become of after they leave the
yes,
Giants.
He like
deep
Giants,
down
yes.
inside, he wants a Hall of Famer, a Pro Bowler. Because he wants, every time we bring up the fact, can you name a Giant that's actually went on to do something after maybe the team parted ways, he always is grasping on. So Anthony Dobley is his latest project. I'm surprised we haven't heard anything from him about DeMontre Moore.
Who
got suspended, correct. He won't be playing in the opener yeah. against the Giants, but I'm surprised he hasn't been giving us any feedback on that. You know, we don't know the whereabouts of Marvin Austin, who also was Charlie's pet project at one point.
Is he on a roster somewhere?
I am going to say no right now. I don't believe he is on a roster right now. I mean, remember, he was with the Broncos briefly.
And then he switched to a different team.
He's a free agent.
He's a free agent.
Marvin Austin's not on the team. But that was another guy that Charlie was keeping close tabs on.
No, so, Corey Washington, actually, he told you to try out for the Cowboys, I think, a couple weeks ago, maybe?
He had tried out for a number of teams since right. he had left the mm-hmm. Giants. So that's another one, I'm sure, that Charlie has a notebook and a pad out and marks down every time.
I feel like most fans operate, when a guy gets on their team, they automatically think they're better than they actually are. For Charlie, it's when a guy leaves
Correct.
The Giants or
exactly.
doesn't sign,
yes.
that player becomes better in his head.
Well, you know, Charlie's cut from a different cloth, which has been well documented.
That's true.
And by the way, on that topic, another thing that's interesting is the Niners signed Lewis Murphy yesterday.
I did not see
former
that.
Former Giants wide receiver. So that's another former Giant
Lewis
for
Murphy.
Charlie
wow.
to at least watch as well.
201-939-4513. Abdul's in Minnesota. What's up, Abdul? How are you?
Hey guys, what's up?
Good to hear from you.
Charlie kind of stole my thunder. I was going to ask you guys what was the plan B for the offensive line, which I really didn't know, but it's been all fleshed out now, and you know, we'll see what happens. You know,
well, again, I'm telling you, I don't know that's yeah. the plan B. I'm guessing
right.
that's the plan B. Just
well,
just want to be clear.
That's why, because usually, you know, a team has an established hierarchy, and when I was looking at the, you know, because I'm getting excited about today's practice and, you know, the physicality of it, the pads and stuff, and I'm like, oh, wow, I wonder what's going to happen. God forbid someone gets hurt, and that kind of led me down that kind of thought plan. I'm like, no, I don't even know, like, who the backup is, because, you know, last year was Beattie, and he's gone, right? Beattie's no longer on the team, right?
Right, yeah.
So I was like, who's the backup? And, you know, it kind of made me worried. You know, there's certain very thin spots on this team that are really important. Cornerback and offensive line, and I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that, you know, that we hold up, you know what I mean?
But in fairness, though, with that being said, and I think a number of the callers have all made valid points, if you look at, though, the entire NFL landscape, how many teams
right.
feel good about their situation if they lose their starting
right.
left tackle? In all seriousness.
No one does.
So how is this situation very different from the other 31 teams, I guess, is my main question.
It's my team.
No, I get that, and I'm not. The point that I'm making is, Abdul, I'm not bringing it up to draw some optimism to this conversation. I guess what I'm just saying is that I just don't see a huge difference between what
no.
the Giants would have to do under those circumstances compared to what the other teams would have to
do. And Abdul, I mean, it frankly goes across all of sports. How many NHL teams feel really good about their backup goalie? How many NBA teams, you know, feel great about their backup point guard? You know, how many Major League Baseball teams can lose their number one starting pitcher and all of a sudden, oh, we'll be fine. We'll just bring somebody up and replace him. You know, it's just kind of the way it is.
There are very few teams historically that are so complete that they, you know, that they could, you know, survive a bad injury.
Yeah.
I understand that, but usually there is an established backup. I'm not saying a good player, but usually there's someone who you know.
Well, but look
right
at
right now, we don't know, and I'm not saying it's bad or good. I'm saying it's kind of unique that there isn't an established.
All right,
that's
right now. Fair. I'll buy that.
You know what's interesting on this topic, and we'll let you continue, Abdul. It just registered because of what the Giants had to deal with when Will Beattie got hurt. Brandon Albert retired yesterday. Tom Coughlin is obviously with Jacksonville. It's like deja vu all over again. Cam Robinson, their rookie, now is pushed into the starting left tackle spot, and we were right. experiencing that a few seasons ago when Beattie got hurt and Eric Flowers got
thrown in
there.
Don't they have a third tackle on that team that can play left tackle? Am I wrong about that?
They may,
Let me look
but Cam Robinson right now, I mean, even Doug Marrone, when he addressed the media,
he said it's going to be Robinson?
Their plan is Cam is first up.
Wow.
So I'm saying to myself, Tom Coughlin, he went through this with the Giants, and now he's dealing with it as an executive for Jacksonville. It's amazing.
God be with you, Blake Bortles.
Yeah. The blind side.
So, my next question is, I haven't looked at you guys for a couple of days. Have you guys discussed the football stories and how that one guy, I think his name Smith, I think?
Yeah, Shane Smith.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people talked about that, Abdul, and appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. I'll make sure we get to our other calls before we say goodbye. I know a lot of people get all excited. Oh, the fullback, they're going to bring the fullback back. Oh, and I know Paul Dottino loves the fullback and all that stuff. I don't see them keeping a traditional fullback. And frankly, I don't think Paul does either. I think that's why Red Ellison was brought in.
Yeah, I agree.
He's the fullback slash tight end. I don't think there's enough of a use for the position in the playbook to warrant keeping two guys that can play fullback. Heck, I even saw in the second day of practice Evan Ingram motion into the backfield and be a lead blocker on a running play. So I don't see it. I don't think if they keep Shane Smith on this roster, Lance, how many plays is he going to be on the field in a game? Three? Five?
That's a great point.
Come on.
He's going to be a special teams guy, and he'll get his limited package of plays. But you have to ask yourself, and that's the same thing the Giants were asking themselves, when Jerry Reese addressed the media after the season, and people were still asking about not replacing Will Johnson, and he said, you know, we sat down, we looked at the offense, and we realized to bring in a fullback to play five or six plays just didn't make sense to use a roster spot. So that's going to be part of the discussion again, I'm sure.
And now again, if Red Ellison wasn't on the roster, I would say, yeah, sure,
of course,
bring him in, because then he'd be on the field for, you know, a dozen or 15 plays, because you don't have that, you know, blocking tight end that can do that job. But with Red Ellison here, I mean, that's why they got him. That's why they went out and they paid him in the offseason to be that guy that can be a lead blocker in the backfield, be a blocker on the line of scrimmage. He's going to be a better receiver than whatever fullback they might have on the roster. And you're not going to ask the fullback to run the ball much. Maybe on a quick fullback dive on a third and one or something like that. But I don't know. To me, I don't think it's a wise use of a roster spot.
Well, if Rhett Ellison could catch, can block, can play fullback, makes a lot of sense to say, you know what? We can have him in on a variety of different plays, and it warrants using a 53-man spot for him. Not to mention, he's also the guy that was the lead blocker for Adrian Peterson when he thrived in Minnesota. So for anybody that's skeptical that Red Ellison can't serve as the fullback, just go back and look at what Peterson did when he was in his heyday in Minnesota and how he was carving up teams and running through traffic and running circles around the opposition. That's obviously something that they feel confident that Ellison can do because he has prior experience in that department.
And you're right. They have Cam Robinson, a left tackle, and they have nobody behind them. I was thinking of Kelvin Beachum, who was there last year. And obviously, he signed elsewhere in the offseason. But, yeah, I mean, Cam Robinson's it. That's it.
Yeah.
And look, it's not like Brandon Aber was playing, you know, great football. Those days.
No,
a lot of injury
issues. Veteran. Right. When you least expect.
It's very hard to ask even a guy coming from a pro-style program in Alabama to come in and be a starting left tackle day one in the NFL. It's asking a lot. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Nick in the Meadowlands. He's up next. Hi, Nick.
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
Doing all right, Nick. What's up?
And John, I hope that your child isn't born a week late for your sake.
You know what, Nick? Don't worry about me. Worry about my wife. She, you know, I feel terrible for her. She's waiting around, very uncomfortable. And look, you know what, though? If she shows up a week late and she's healthy, I'll sign up for that today. As long as everything's good.
It's just a little joke on that date that Charlie was saying.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you.
You don't want that tied in there with the kid. Okay. Plus the wife. She's already suffered enough going through the whole summer carrying around a kid. Right?
And dealing with me.
Yeah. Well, that goes without saying.
My wife did the same. She had to go all the way till November, though. My wife is my first one. So, anyway, I can't believe I didn't hear the name Will Beattie until you guys said it when he was on the line. I thought he was hiding him. That's why he's not talking about him. He's up there at the Charlie camp up
I
there
think,
in Maine.
Nick, I think he might have actually given up on the dream of Will Beattie coming back here. Thank goodness. I think that dream is dead. He's moved on.
He's keeping him on ice. Like I said, he's up there at training camp with Charlie right now. Charlie's training him.
Yeah,
coaching him up a little bit.
Hey, maybe you can go back and play with Tom down in Jacksonville. They need a left tackle.
Right? Exactly. I'm surprised he's not campaigning for that. Yeah.
With the caller before, got to remember something. John Riggins was 6'2" and like 235.
Yeah, he was a big boy.
He wasn't a little guy. He was a big boy. And football, you know, that was smash mouth football back in the day. It's, you know, you need Red Ellison to do that if anybody's going to lead block and run the ball and all that. He's the only guy that's big enough probably to handle, you know, something like John Riggins did.
But, John Riggins is a Hall of Famer. I mean, my goodness, that's a really high bar. That's a high bar.
Paul Perkins is in year two. You
know? Yeah, I know.
Hasn't even played a full 16 games.
Eric Dickerson, you know, all these guys back in the day, they were big, a lot of them, you know?
Yeah.
But Maurice Jones-Drew was 5'7", and he was like 210, by the way. He was like a bowling ball.
Exactly.
So if you put 4 or 5 inches on that guy's frame, he probably would have been 235 or 240. He was big, you know, because most guys that were that size, like a Barry Sanders or, you know, go down the line, they were, you know, on the side of 200 pounds and under, you know what I mean? Most guys that are 5'8", 5'7", like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Much leaner, so thinner, yeah.
That guy was a different beast in his own, man. He was like a bowling ball, like I said. It was just hard to tackle a guy like that. It's just comes with weight and, you know, 5'7". I mean,
well, the guy had humongous calves. I mean, your point is well taken, Nick. But I still say that the fact that he was a small guy, regardless of his frame, I think it says a lot about his aggressiveness as a runner that helped him thrive.
He ran angry.
Exactly. Yeah.
We need a couple guys to run angry, and that'll get you that 1 or 2 yards whenever it's third down. So we just gotta wait and see. And I can't wait to see, you know, after today and. People are going to start lighting up the phone lines, I'm sure, at the end of the week, because then you'll know about, you know, these guys putting the pads on, then you'll know about the trenches, you know. That's what I can't wait to see.
Yeah, Nick, absolutely. And I think the other thing you got to throw out there, too, I mean, I would expect Flowers to struggle a little bit only because he's going up against such a great player. I mean, Olivier Vernon is impossible to block, so he's not going to go out there and, you know, pitch shutouts here and shut people down. You know, even if you had, you know, Tyron Smith or Jason Peters or Trent Williams out there, they're not going to pitch shutouts in practice against Olivier Vernon. He's too good of a player. Same thing on the other side for Bobby Hart and JPP. They're going against great guys. The question is, can they hold their own? Will they give as much as they take? And I think that's what you have to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and it's like the rest of the team, you know, really, look at the secondary who they have to line up against. I mean, this is only good for us. I mean, a lot of people don't see that. They don't think about every day they're going up against these guys in practice, and they got some really great guys on the team, you know. So, you know, you look around the league and you look at history, you know, look at guys that had to line up against Jerry Rice in practice. I mean, come on.
Absolutely. You know? Nick, appreciate
that
the call,
makes
my friend.
You better, you know, so absolutely. I can't wait to see these guys whenever they start hitting, you know.
Thank you, Nick.
All right, Nick.
I got optimism. Take care.
Take it easy, man.
Appreciate the call.
201-939-4513. Hudson in Brooklyn. He's up next. What's going on, Hudson? How are you? He's on line one.
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you doing?
Good, Hudson. How are you?
All right, really good. I'll make this quick because there's a couple things I want to shoot at you.
Yeah, go ahead.
You tell me what you think.
Sure.
When you and Dan write the little articles for Giants.com, can you please keep a close eye on Dalvin Tomlinson and just, you know, let the people know how he's doing one-on-one with the drills, and does he look like he has the skills to be a penetrating three tech?
Hudson, I look forward to being able to do some judgment on O-line, D-line. That's all I'm going to be watching. I've been watching wide receivers and cornerbacks run around for the better part of 3 or 4 months. I'm tired of it. I want to see the guys inside do a little bit, so that's what I'm going to be watching. I guarantee you, come the end of the week, we'll have some stuff on the interior defensive lineman for you.
Thank you. And I also want to ask you, are we able to tell anything when the guys just have uppers on? Are you able to tell how the guys in the trenches do with uppers?
It's a good question. I think you can. Like Ben McAdoo's been kind of treating all of camp here, though, they're bringing the guys along slowly. I mean, you saw it. They did a little bit more on day two, a little bit more on day three. Now you go into uppers. Then you're going to do a little bit more tomorrow with full pads. And the next day, then you have a day off. Then they're going to have their monster practice on August 5th, which is going to be, you know, their big full 9-on-7 super physicality type of practice to start getting ready for that first preseason game. So, yeah, Hudson, you can. Like I said earlier in the show, there aren't going to be any one-on-ones as far as I understand today between the O-line and D-line. So it won't be quite everything. But I think you'll be able to start getting a good feel for what these guys can do. Because having pads on affects mobility, affects hand placement, affects power rush, all those sorts of things you can now do and deal with the pads on. So short answer, yes, you can start figuring things out with uppers on.
Okay. As far as the tight ends, are you, from what you've seen already and maybe what you're going to see within the next couple of days, would you be, can you please tell me how does Jarrell Adams, how does he fare compared to Evan Engram? Because I personally would like to see between the end of this year and beginning of next year to have those two as the pillars for the Giants as far as tight ends going forward, because I think Jarrell Adams is talented enough to do that, to run a double tight end set with Evan Engram. Go ahead.
I'll answer your question first, and then we'll let you ask your final one. I haven't seen Adams out there much with the first team, I got to be honest with you. They have been rotating the tight ends a lot, so I don't track that on every play. So he could have been out there, I just might not have noticed him. But they have been rotating them an awful lot throughout practice. I thought Adams made some progress. He looked a lot faster, and he looked like he understood the offense better. Talking to Kevin Gilbride Jr., I believe it was back in June, he said he needs to be a little bit more consistent. I think that's kind of what they're working on right now. I think for this year, you're going to see a lot of Red Ellison with Evan Engram, probably more so than you're going to see Jarrell Adams with Evan Engram.
Because I think you have the receiving blocking combination there. If you put Adams and Engram out there, I mean, Engram is talking about adjusting and learning to be a blocker, and Adams has limited experience too. I just don't think that's an ideal combination if you want to be able to maximize your blocking and receiving at that position.
Okay. So my last question, I guess I'll put it to the secondary. I wanted you guys to elaborate on how Eli Apple is doing out there, and also Darren Thompson. I'd like to know how well is he playing out there.
Great. Appreciate the call, Hudson. Thanks a lot. Darian Thompson, first and most important thing for him is that he's taken all the first-team snaps, and he's been healthy, and he has been limited, and he's basically gotten all the first-team snaps in training camp so far when he was splitting with Andrew Adams a little bit in the spring. Thompson's pretty much been the guy out there so far. Not to say there's still not a competition, but Thompson seems to be given the first chance with the first team. As for Eli Apple, he's had the unfortunate task of being lined up with Odell Beckham Jr. an awful lot. That's kind of the way it's just been set up, where Beckham has been on Apple's side more so than he has been on Janoris Jenkins' side, which is unfortunate for any cornerback that has to deal with Odell Beckham Jr. Now, look, Beckham's made catches on him. I mean, look, Beckham's going to make catches on everybody. It's how it goes. But I frankly think Apple's done a really good job. I think he's been less handsy and less grabby than he's been in years past. He's gotten his head around and located the ball and gotten his hand on the football a lot more. He hasn't come up with a pick yet, but he has been getting his hand on the ball to knock it away. So I've actually seen, I think, a good amount of progress from Apple from last year to this year.
Yeah, he's had a few deflections during the course of the first few training camp practices, so that's encouraging. And, you know, even though, like you mentioned, John, it's not exciting to necessarily have to go up against Odell Beckham, but you know what? In the long run, that's a benefit for somebody like Eli Apple. If you're going up against Odell Beckham every single day, you're not going up against Odell Beckham every single game. So it's, to me, a very good test for a young guy like that to get that type of experience.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think he has confidence. I think it's growing. He basically is the starting cornerback now with Janoris Jenkins. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie is the slot guy. Now he's going to play 80% of the snaps anyway. But Eli Apple, for all the fans that complained about the Giants picking him last year, from what I can see, he's going to turn out to be a pretty darn good cornerback. Final call of the show is Jonathan in Florida. Then we're going to end the couple minutes early so we can all get out to practice. What's up, Jonathan? How are you?
How's it going, guys?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, good, good. I love the show. I'm a super fan of the show.
Appreciate that. Thanks for tuning in.
Listen to it all the time when I can. I wanted to say I'm a super, super JPP fan. I'm super excited for the season. I hope he gets a lot of sacks. And I actually went to the same high school as JPP. So maybe when you see him, tell him Buck Fry. He'll probably be like, oh. He'll probably think that's pretty funny.
Okay, will do.
Sounds good. What else you got for
and,
us?
I got also a bold prediction. I think that my bold prediction is that Brandon Marshall will have more touchdowns than OBJ.
All right. That's a good one. We can add that to the list. Absolutely.
Now, here's my follow-up question, though, to your bold prediction, Jonathan. Does that mean that both are going to have double digits, or you think Marshall's going to have double digits and Beckham will be single?
No, I think both will have double digits, but I think Brandon Marshall might have one or two up on him.
Interesting. Cause
how about this question? Will Marshall and Beckham break the record set by Marshall and Decker for most touchdowns by a wide receiver a couple of years ago?
Do you remember what those totals were off the top? Just
out
of curiosity.
I can look that up for you. Real
I don't
quick.
Remember.
I don't remember what those numbers were. But
it was record setting, though, if I recall, right? Or at least it was the most that particular year.
They may have. But you know what? It's hard to believe because Davante Adams and Jordy Nelson have been up there, too, in terms of their totals. So
they might have just led the league that one individual
season.
Yeah,
it may have just been that season, mm-hmm. John, because as I mentioned, if you look at the numbers, Davante Adams and Jordy Nelson have had double-digit touchdowns. Actually, I think they're coming off a season which they had double-digit touchdowns. So there's been some other interesting combinations. But can Marshall and Beckham set ultimate records? I mean, listen, I always go back to the whole goal is that the Giants are going to have more balance in terms of their offense this season, and the rushing touchdowns are going to go up a little bit, which would perhaps take away from some of the passing touchdowns. That, I think, would be the most encouraging.
I think this could be a good factor friction question for Sal, and we should pass this on to him. Decker and Marshall combined for 26 touchdowns in 2015, 14 for Marshall, 12 for Decker. Do you think they will have 26 or more, Jonathan?
That's kind of hard. I think they'll be in that range. I think they'll be in that range, maybe 20, maybe 22, maybe something like that.
Okay. I think that's a fair number. You got anything else for us, Jonathan?
Nope, that's it. Thank you so much, guys.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the call. That's a good one. I mean, 26 is a big ask, especially considering you got Sterling Shepard and you have Evan Engram on the team. But I don't think it's out of the question. I think aiming for 22 or 23 from those guys is probably a fair number. You know, 12 or 13 from Beckham, 10 from Marshall, something like that.
I mean, I think that's fair. I don't think that's a stretch. It's going to be tough to pull off regardless because keep in mind, as you mentioned, Marshall and Decker were the main weapons on that Jets team. It's easy to feel that the quarterback's going to go to one of those two. The Giants, I think you have a few more options.
The final point I'll bring up before we say goodbye is, I know I've heard a lot of people being super enthusiastic about Evan Engram, looking at, not Giant reporters necessarily, but a lot of like, you know, analysts and even like fantasy previews and stuff like that. Oh, Everingham's going to be great. Everingham's going to be great. You look at the history of rookie tight ends in the National Football League, Lance. Rookie tight ends generally do not do a whole lot in their first year in the pros. I'm not telling you that Engram can't do it. He's a very polished wide receiver. He's a great athlete. He's a good player. But historically, tight ends in their rookie year don't do a whole lot. So I still think our numbers for him that we thought of at the beginning of the year between, you know, 40 and 50 catches, you know, between 600 and 750 yards, somewhere in that area. I think that's a good place for him to wind up.
I'm standing by that. I mean, we had that conversation, I think, a few weeks back on this program. I think that that's a realistic number to throw out there. If he exceeds that, hey, then that's icing on the cake. But once again, if you go by track record, and you have to go by track record, it's not easy. Especially because, remember, Evan Engram came out this week and he said, tight end position is the Swiss Army knife. It's one of the most challenging positions to play in the NFL because they want you to do special teams. They want you to block. They want you to receive. I mean, he's taken on an awful lot from just a mental standpoint.
And Ben McAdoo said it yesterday at his press conference, or Sunday at his press conference, is the most complicated position in the offense for them to learn. Yeah. So, again, I'm not saying he's going to be bad. I'm just saying temper your expectations.
Yeah, well, I think that's fair. By the way, speaking of the tight end position, considering you brought up McAdoo, and the Packers, 26 touchdowns for Davante Adams and Jordy Nelson last season.
So they matched.
Decker and Marshall. I don't know if that's ultimately the NFL record.
I don't know either.
I do recall the two of them having a field day, and they did. 26 for the both of them combined.
Yeah, and Randall Cobb only had four that year. I'm sure Sterling Shepard would like to get more than that. So
yes.
We'll see what happens. Great. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Tomorrow, somebody will be back hosting the show. It's not me. I don't know who.
You know what I like about you? You finally learned your lesson. You're usually like, oh, these two guys are hosting. You butcher it, and I got to correct you. Now you just go, you know what? Two people are going to be here. Guess who?
And one of them's not me. So we'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com, everybody. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Have a good one.